Good morning, and welcome to the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy's live weekly broadcast. I'm Roberta Oster, the Communications Director. Our program brings you news and analysis about economic, racial, social, and environmental justice issues here in Virginia. We bring the expertise and perspective of legislators, community members, policy experts, and faith leaders. We keep you informed, and we keep our elected officials accountable. In keeping with the mission of the Virginia Interfaith Center and our partner, Virginia Interfaith Power and Light, we will share resources and offer opportunities for you to get involved in our work, advancing social justice and helping our neighbors. And our broadcast is interactive. You'll be able to ask questions of our experts during the show on this feed. We care about what you think, so please participate and ask questions. And now to today's program. Our focus is on a special initiative called Climate in the Pulpits: Vote and Commit to Climate Justice and Beloved Community. We will be hearing from two national leaders on this issue. Our first special guest is Meg Mall, who is Executive Director of Faith Alliance for Climate Solutions. Welcome, Meg. And our second guest is Joelle Novy, who is Director of Interfaith Power and Light from Maryland, DC, and Northern Virginia. And our moderator is my colleague and dear friend, Reverend Dr. Faith Harris, who is Interim Co-Director of Virginia Interfaith Power and Light. Faith?
Good morning. Today is our 30-day countdown for Climate in the Pulpits, on the Binma, and in the Minbar, scheduled for October 2nd through the 4th. This is our second year Virginia IPL is participating in Climate Pulpits, and we are so happy to do so again. What a great opportunity it is for faith leaders across the state to lift up the responsibility to care for the earth as a gift to all of us who share this planet. We are so excited to have you join us today to learn more about Climate in the Pulpits and how you and your faith community can participate. And so let's turn to our guests now and ask them a few questions so that we can learn more about Climate in the Pulpits. Joelle, I think it was IPLDMV that initiated Climate in the Pulpits in the beginning. What is Climate in the Pulpits and on the Binma and in the Minbar? And then give us a little background history and when did it get started? And then finally, try to help us understand what are Binma and Minbar.
Sure. Good morning. It's so good to see both of you. I'm Joelle Novy with Interfaith Power and Light, DMV, and we love working closely with our Virginia partners, Virginia Interfaith Power and Light and Faith Alliance for Climate Solutions. We started Climate in the Pulpits on the Bema or in the Minbar several years ago, and I have to give credit to my colleague, Brooke Harper, formerly of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, who had the idea for this program originally. It's an invitation to congregations to every congregation in Virginia of every faith tradition to find a way to raise up climate justice as part of the plenary gatherings of your congregation during a particular weekend, and to give the folks who attend your congregation an opportunity to take action in the moment on what they learn. This has been one of my favorite and programs, and one of the ones where I feel we are touching and opening hearts, across many, many different communities, because the program asks faith communities to do two simple but really powerful things. It's an invitation to talk about what's happening to our climate. And that is more radical than you might think, because what is happening to our climate is a crisis. And lots of people are concerned and will tell, social scientists have found that if you ask Americans Are you concerned and worried about what's happening to our climate, that our burning fossil fuels for electricity is pouring heat trapping climate pollution into our atmosphere, causing our earth to warm, causing our neighbors to suffer? A lot of Americans, a lot of us say, yes, that's a concern to me. But if those same social scientists ask, how have you had a conversation with someone in your family or in your community or a neighbor in the last few weeks about climate change? Most of them say no. So we have this problem where something's on our hearts, but we're not talking about it. And so the people in our lives think that we don't care. And we think they don't care because they're not opening the conversation either. It's called a spiral of climate silence. So by having a time when we ask our congregations to raise this up all together and setting that date on the calendar, we set an intention that we need to learn how to open these conversations even when they're hard. So that's the first simple but powerful thing about climate in the pulpits. But the second key piece is that we are having those conversations not just anywhere, but in our faith communities. And I have come to believe, I've been doing this work in congregations across Northern Virginia for 11 years now. And I am more passionate than ever about the unique power of opening climate conversations in our faith communities, because climate change in particular has become, unfortunately, a very politicized issue, and people hear it as something that's about political identity. But really, that's not where it belongs. It's really a question about how are the choices we're making impacting our neighbors? How is what we're doing causing folks to suffer? And why is that, how could I live out my values with respect to what we're learning about our impact on the world? So when we talk about climate change, when we open those conversations in our faith communities, we are reaching people who would not hear those messages anywhere else. And they are hearing it as, I like to say, people in congregations listen with their moral ears, right? They hear what we say in our congregations as a matter of right and wrong, caring for our neighbors, being who we want to be in the world. So I just want to invite absolutely anyone who's listening to us today to think about how you might open a conversation about climate change through the Climate in the Pulpits program in the faith community that you're a part of. And we will talk more about some of the resources, but it's really up to you to figure out how to open those conversations. But I just wanna tell everyone who's listening today that you are the most powerful person in the world to open this critical conversation about climate justice in your congregation. And you will be able to open hearts to this issue that nobody else can. So I want to invite everyone to understand the power you have to use this program to advance those critical conversations. I don't want to forget Faith's request that we clarify what the different names of the, Climate in the Pulpits is an allusion to Christian communities, and then on the Bima is the prayer platform at the front of a synagogue, Jewish communities. And in the minbar is the equivalent in masajid or Muslim communities. But I'm mindful, and this is an important thing we'll talk about today, that many, many of our congregations are not meeting physically on bimas or pulpits at all right now. And so we are committed to offering a Climate in the Pulpits program that you can bring to however your congregation is gathering for worship, including online.
Thank you. Thank you, Joelle. That was really great information, and you packed a lot of very important messaging on why climate and why we're so passionate and so concerned about caring for in the environment, that it in fact is part of the work that we do as and part of our purpose and calling as people of faith, that we care about our neighbors, and our neighbors are impacted by climate and the climate crisis in ways that sometimes I think that we're a little blind to. So thank you for raising that up so very well. Meg, tell us a little bit about your organization and what is the value of Climate in the Pulpits for you and your organization?
Thank you, Faith. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here this morning alongside my colleagues, Joelle and Faith and all of you that are listening in. Faith Alliance for Climate Solutions is a network of over 2,500 people from 75 faith communities all across Northern Virginia. We motivate, organize, and inspire the faith community to act on climate change. We do this through our advocacy programs, our education, and our outreach. One of the core components of our work and the backbone really of our advocacy are our advocacy teams, which are comprised of laity and faith leaders that meet monthly to talk about the issues. They're charged with meeting with their local elected officials at least several times a year. They are educated on the issues. When there's a call to action, they step up. It's so critical, and we are growing those numbers every day. So that's just a snapshot about Faith Alliance for Climate Solutions. To address the second part of your question, is the value of climate in the pulpits to Faith Alliance for Climate Solutions, or FACTS. In addition to what Joelle said, we really see climate in the pulpits as a collective call to action. I think there's something to be said for coming together all at once. We know, and all of you in your faith communities that are champions of sustainability are active all throughout the year, and that's critical and essential. And in addition to that, there's value in the solidarity of acting over one weekend and that collective power. So we're not just individuals, we're not just in our faith communities, we're spanning all across Virginia coming together. So that to us is one of the values.
Thank you, Meg. I think that's what you emphasized there about it's a day and a week and a specific time set aside for this, and that we all are doing the same thing. I think it gives us a sense of empowerment that there are so many other faith communities also working to advance a climate messaging that digs into our values and helps us to understand as people of faith, our role, our responsibility, and really the way that we are gifted. I see this as a privilege, that we have a privilege to talk to our neighbors and to talk to our faith communities about how important and how beautiful and how wonderful this gift Earth is for us. And what a great opportunity and a privilege to protect it. Joelle and Meg, this question is for both of you. This year, our theme for Climate in the Pulpit is vote, committing ourselves to climate justice and beloved community. And what does that mean to you? And what do you think it could mean to other faith leaders who register for this, who register and participate during this weekend of climate action? In other words, how do voting, climate justice, and beloved community relate in your mind? How do we put all of that together? And whoever wants to go first is fine with me.
I can start. That's fine. There's definitely a lot to unpack in this question. I think it's rather loaded, so I'll give it a start, and we can build from there. At FACTS, we're often asked what are the most impactful things we can do as individuals to act on climate change, and we have come around, you know, four sort of key ideas, and one of which Joelle already mentioned. And so we talk about talking. So number one, we need to talk about climate change and address this spiral of silence. And then we also talk about joining and the importance of joining with others. We're not just in our own corner. We come together as a faith community, and then we come together as the collective faith community. And then we talk about making a commitment. And that commitment can mean a lot of different things. But making commitment to make changes in your own behaviors, making a commitment to reduce your carbon emissions at your faith community and so forth. And then the last one is, of course, to vote. And the voting is so tied to our rights as individuals and respecting our dignity as individuals, which we as the faith community are called on to protect for all of this. Is really our calling, is to protect the dignity of the lives of everyone. And so, you know, tying that back to the beloved community, which is sort of founded on economic and social justice. And so bringing that and then tying over to climate justice, which we know that we cannot have economic and social justice if we don't have a stable climate. And so so that's the way I weave through all this and tie all these together. They're absolutely connected, and getting out the vote is absolutely critical.
That's beautiful. And we talk a lot about those same three categories, that it's important to talk about climate change in our communities and to think about how our traditions call us to respond. It's important to live out those values by going green in our facilities and at our homes and in the way we live, and modeling how the, you know, our clean energy future is going to look. But at the end of the day, we also have to be part of that, you know, grassroots movements for more systemic change. And that sometimes looks like advocating, you know, FACTS is advocating in Fairfax County for stronger climate policy at the county level. And the IPLs are supporting, you know, congregations across Virginia in advocating for strong state level policy. And then when the time comes to vote, we need to vote for leaders that reflect our values about caring for creation and climate justice. I was thinking about how, you know, I've seen a lot of t-shirts recently that say, that have the word protesters crossed out and protectors written underneath. And so often the environmental movements that have stopped pipelines in Virginia and stopped pipelines elsewhere have said we see ourselves as protectors. And I think one of the things that we try to cultivate in the communities where we're working is a consciousness of being, of what it means to be a protector of the climate and to be a protector of other people and to be a protector of ecosystems. And one of the things that, you know, cultivates that protector consciousness is remembering that we're interdependent and that every single element has value, every single voice has value. So as we come up on this critical election, I'm thinking about, first of all, what does it mean to really value every person's voice and to affirm that we need to hear from everyone in a democracy to really, like, you know, be a beloved community. Every voice needs to count. And we each need to take responsibility for speaking out and taking that stand. But also we've worked really hard over, you know, so many of our congregations have stepped up in this pandemic to care for each other and to protect each other from a dangerous virus. And so many, I've just seen so many beautiful examples, and everyone listening probably has seen others of ways that faith communities are stepping up to care for each other right now and to keep each other safe. And, you know, it's also very important that we do that in our elect, that we have an election that protects people's health. And allows them to vote safely. So that's one of the reasons we're encouraging everyone to let their congregations know about ways to request a mail ballot so that you can, and drop it off in a Dropbox so you can, you know, have your voice heard and have your neighbors' voices heard, and everyone can do so in a way that protects everyone's health and safety.
Thank you both. And I think, you know, when we think about beloved community, we're thinking about, we're certainly that language we know came from the 60s civil rights movement. And many times we heard and when we read sermons and statements by Martin Luther King Jr., that he talked about the beloved community. Our Congressman Lewis, who just passed away recently, talked about the beloved community. And the beloved community, in my mind, is a time, and it's not a place, but it's a time, it's an ethos that actually, where we actualize love and commitment and neighborliness, and that there's brotherly and sisterly love, and that there is a sense of purpose that guides our actions. And so, and that in many ways, some might call that democracy, right? And so voting and being a part of a democracy is an integral part of being a part of a democracy, having that opportunity to use the ballot box to express our opinion, to express our voice. You know, when we vote, we're voting it's not just a perfunctory task. It actually means something. And so it means we are committing to a purpose, and we're committing with so many millions of other people in our country to build together what we can't do apart. And so I think of beloved community, I think of all the parts of what it means to be a good citizen as well. And then of course our values as people of faith are ground all of that, and that we care about not just our families, not just about our next door neighbors, not just about people who look like us, not just like people who sound like us, who worship like us, but people and the environment that sustains life for all. And so I think this is such a beautiful theme for us this year. And I hope that many faith communities will participate in their own way to talk about and to amplify the importance of voting as a sacred value, a sacred right of being part of this great democracy, and that it is our responsibility to keep it and to work it and to build it and to renew it and to refresh it and to make it what we together hope that it will be for all of us. So thank you both for that, really great response to that question. So this is another question for both of you. Who will benefit from participating in Climates in the Pulpit? Well, is it just our faith communities? Is it Virginians? Is it the global community? Who benefits when we talk about climate, when we speak up for climate, when we protect and protest for protecting the climate?
I mean, I believe that we all benefit when faith communities are having these conversations. I wanted to say a few words just to be very specific for a minute about what it means to participate in Climate in the Pulpits. What when we say we send you resources, what does that mean? So some of the resources that will be available for download on our respective websites, if your congregation signs up, include suggestions for tying the sermon if you have a sermon in your congregation, to some of the major lectionaries. So we'll include suggestions for tying climate justice and the importance of voting for climate leadership to the Revised Common Lectionary, which is used in many Protestant churches. We will send homily helps for tying, this is Feast of St. Francis weekend. So for Catholic communities, you'll get some resources suggesting ways to tie in into a homily. And then there'll be resources for Jewish communities, specifically highlighting the holiday of Sukkot. This weekend is the first 2 days of the holiday of Sukkot. It's a great, great ecological holiday with lots of connections. And likewise, we'll provide resources for Muslim communities and if anything else we can find to share for use. And the other thing we're hoping to that we'll offer for you to think about is if you're meeting online and you want to create kind of a moment where people will take a moment in the middle of this gathering to act together to make sure that they are registered to vote, make sure they've requested their mail ballot. We are going to send some suggested pieces of music you can play as a kind of offertory moment while people, everyone takes action together to go to the link and take that step. Sometimes the community support helps you take those steps. As to who benefits when we open these conversations, I just believe we won't be able to solve a global problem, a global crisis like the climate crisis without absolutely everyone. When faith communities get involved in climate movement, first of all, we bring along people who would not engage anywhere else. Because when we talk about it in people's faith communities, they see it as a matter of right and wrong and living out their values. But when we talk, then when we become part of the larger climate movement, we elevate those movements by framing what we're doing together as a moral issue, as in a matter of right and wrong and justice and values. And we get attention that other, you know, some of the more usual suspects struggle to get with our elected leaders. And I've seen that specifically in Virginia. I have seen how powerful it is when faith leaders get involved in climate advocacy and ask to speak to their elected leaders about climate issues. We are heard differently and we get doors open to us that some of our colleagues in the environmental organizations might struggle to do who benefits any human being who wants to live on a livable climate benefits when our communities are deeply engaged in this work.
Well, I agree. It's all of the above. Absolutely. And the more members of the faith community that engage in this conversation, it truly does benefit all of society. I think that the faith community has always been exceptionally strong in the area of social justice. And I think the time has come where we really need to ensure that those we talk about intersectionality all the time now, but that where we as climate activists see those connections are so obvious that it's maybe not obvious to all. So when we help illustrate those intersections with housing, with social justice, with racial equity, that we're all working truly on the same issue, and so we can be more powerful. So so the answer is we all benefit, and we need everyone. And I guess the other point I was going to make is that the faith community is in every corner of society. We're at the boardroom, we're in the public sector, and so we can reach people at all levels of society. So that's another reason why it's so critical.
I love the way both of you framed that, and it kind of leads right back into what the question that we had previously about what is beloved community. You just described beloved community by suggesting that everyone participates, and everyone who participates also benefits, and everybody who participates is working on for neighbor. And so it's so critical that as many of us who in our own faith communities participate, and to find ways, many ways. This is a great step for congregations and communities that have not talked about climate very often, or thought about it as a value or a faith value that they needed to address in their community. But now here's an opportunity for those of you who have not done so to think about it in ways that maybe you hadn't done before, and it gives you an opportunity to share this time with so many others who are working on and for climate justice and for social justice. And there's just no way for us to work in these siloed issue areas anymore. We recognize, I think that for all of us, if we haven't yet recognized that climate justice and social justice, environmental justice, these are all part of what it means to be, these are all important aspects of creating and developing a community where all of us can live, breathe, drink fresh water, enjoy greenery, eat good food, healthy food. And if our experience in this pandemic hasn't taught us this, I'm not sure what else we can do other than continue to do this hard work of encouraging people to speak up for climate. So thank you both for those really great responses. Joelle, you kind of started getting into the ways that we can participate. And I wanted ways that communities can get involved and participate in some of the resources that we will be offering. But let's talk about some specific things that faith communities, clergy, imams, rabbis, what can they do? What are the things that you're suggesting that they do? Let's say in the service, let's say someone is doing a virtual service online. What can they do to amplify the climate issues and as well as voting and encourage their communities to take action towards building that beloved community?
I think anything you do to open that conversation while everyone's gathered to take advantage of the plenary gatherings of your community, whether they're online or in person, is incredibly powerful. And one of the things I love about organizing in faith communities is that they are pre-organized and everyone already is in community with each other and gets together regularly. I would suggest that if clergy that want to be supportive of this work could make their message or sermon about this issue, about climate justice on this particular day. And I think we communicate best about climate change when we speak personally about why it matters to us. The science has been clear for years and years, but we still are not effective enough at explaining why it matters. So, I would invite clergy or others who are speaking in their congregations to answer the question, why does climate change matter to you? I think that is the way to invite others into coming to matter to them. We are happy to hear from congregations that would like guest speakers, either from our organizations or we from other speakers that we could connect them with, messengers maybe from their own tradition. And alternatively, you can raise up a voice from your own congregation. I believe that pretty much every faith community has at least one green sheep, somebody who might feel a little bit lonely, but who themselves deeply understands why environmental issues are issues that need to be discussed in our faith communities. And so if you have that, if you're thinking of that person who's the green sheep in your community, I invite you to maybe invite them to speak, or at least if not the sermon, then make an announcement as part of the plenary worship gathering. And as I said, we believe that creating a moment to take action is really critical, that when we raise up climate crisis, it makes people agitated and upset, and it's not responsible, honestly, to create that discomfort and not immediately provide a way to take action and to join with others to mean it to that's the only way we can find hope, is to be in community responding. So in before times, when we gathered in person in our congregations, that moment was a bulletin insert that came physically in the programs, and everyone signed them during services where that was appropriate, and sometimes even returned them right there in the collection plate. We have adapted that model this year so that those who are worshiping online, like I said, can have a little offertory moment where you play some music that takes 3 or 4 minutes, and everyone is invited simultaneously to click on a link and and take that, you know, have that discipline and accountability with their community to make sure they're registered to vote, make sure they have requested a mail ballot, et cetera.
I'm reading your lips, Faith, and I think you want me to talk.
I thought I had unmuted myself. I apologize. No problem. What are some of the ways that you want to suggest that faith leaders and faith communities can participate during this weekend? And recognizing that sometimes people have already planned something for this weekend, and maybe this doesn't fit, you know, neatly into your calendar. But we're in and around this weekend, we're asking everyone to participate. And so it would be fair if you're not able to do it on the 2nd through the 4th, that you do it anytime around October, during the month of October.
Well, yeah, great if it's possible to use the time during one of your faith gatherings to speak about the issue, number one. And in addition to that, I know that IPL has a Faith Climate Justice Voter Pledge that I think would be wonderful to sign. And so we will have that available as well. It's always nice to pair discussion with action. So I think that's another possibility. You know, in the past, we've done things like, you know, movie screenings and so forth. And, you know, the most important thing is to make a commitment to bring the topic to your faith community on around that weekend. And just, you know, I think it's even more important right now during this pandemic, and where most of us are still meeting virtually, that we can use this as a little spark to go ahead and make sure our green teams are still providing leadership in our communities, and getting beyond the green teams into our broader faith communities, so that we're increasing the number of people that are hearing that message. And I think this Climate in the Pulpit is a really good opportunity to do that.
Yeah, thank you, Meg, for bringing up some of the work that Virginia IPL is doing as well. Is, yes, the voter pledge, and you can go to I think it should be coming up on the screen, but you can go to IPL voter pledge, and take the voter pledge, and you can have your congregation during that time of listening to music or whatever you choose to do, however you choose to do it. You can ask your congregation to all take the pledge at the same time, as well as there is a voter guide, Democracy 2020 voter guide, that we are also offering. And you can use that for study. You could plan a study for that week and go through the issues that are in the voter guide. And that is another bit.ly IPL voter guide. So we encourage you to consider that. And then finally, Virginia IPL we're very excited that we have connected the voter guide and the voter pledge to what we're calling Green Futures. And this is for congregations who are wanting to take that next step. So they can, you can enter your congregation, register your congregation for Green Futures. It actually gives you an opportunity to win a mini grant of up to $500 to either plant a vegetable garden, maybe a rain garden, to start a solar fund to go solar, to do some energy efficiency work around your in your buildings, and many other things that maybe you might come up with that will help to lower your carbon footprint. We're excited about this opportunity. It's the first time we've ever had a chance to do anything like this, and so we encourage you to also consider going to our Green Futures Challenge, which is also a bit.ly, and that's 30x bit.ly/30xwe16. And I think that also might come up on our across the banner. But we've had this really rich conversation today about kind of announcing and launching Climate in the Pulpits. To wrap up the conversation, what's the last thing you want people to know about, or the most important thing that you want, last thing you want to say, and the most important thing you want them to know about Climate in the Pulpits? And I'll start with Meg.
Well, in summary, I think that it's important never to that we don't become complacent in all this, and that we continue to, again, make this, there's so much going on in the world right now, and that that we continue to talk about the message and the narrative, which is that all of these issues are interrelated, and we really just can't afford to rest. And so that we continue to provide people, and in this case through the faith community, opportunities to act on these values. And Climate in the Pulpit does that.
My message to everyone today would be to know that this work to address the climate crisis is a journey. It will not start and end on October, this October. And it will be a journey we're all in for the rest of our lives. All of us speaking today are part of grassroots organizations that are really building relationships and ongoing partnership with congregations day in and day out, building that movement that we need to address climate change as a country and as a world. So I welcome folks participating in Climate in the Pulpits. But the most important thing to me is that we get connected with each other and stay connected, because it's only by building a grassroots movement of religious communities across the Commonwealth of Virginia that we're going to make really important change.
And I think there was a question that came in while we were discussing Climate in the Pulpits, and it really has more to do with how do we talk to candidates? It came from Ann Murray. And so she's asking, what are some of the key elements we should be listening for in candidate forums, debates, and what kind of questions should we raise with candidates, especially at local elections? And I know I was trying to wrap us up, but I think this is an important question. And if you, either one of you want to respond to that, that would be helpful. And I can respond last.
Meg, do you want to? I know you've done some candidate forums.
Sure. Well, I mean, first and foremost, we just want to make sure that climate is a part of the discussion. Period. Again, it's not a given that it will be, and so you know every opportunity we have to seed any question about climate is a priority. And then I think, you know, within that, I think we can start to listen to, you know, how the candidates, what are the policies and how are they talking about it, but how are they connecting that to equity, to these other issues? You know, do they see those connections, and is that evident in how they present the issues?
I agree. Naming this as something we care about and making sure candidates hear over and over again that this is a top priority for the people they're running to represent is so important. And faith voices can be a particularly powerful. We can get better and better at articulating why we care about it in ways that will that they will be accountable to down the road. I would also say I'm more and more aware of the ways that polluter money distorts our politics. So I think questions that ask ask candidates who they'll be working for, who they're beholden to, and what their relationship is, both to the people they're running to represent, but also to the to polluters and to polluter money is an important question to have on the table.
Yes, I agree with both Meg and Joelle, and I think that the other question is the questions we want to ask ourselves when we're fielding questions and thinking about our vote and who we want to vote for. It's not only what do they say, but also how have they voted previously? What are their commitments, and how do they demonstrate what's priority for them? If they're voting with and for, lowering standards and lowering standards and allowing, polluters and fossil fuel infrastructure, when at the same time the state is trying to move towards a fossil fuel, a renewable future, right? And to move off of fossil fuels for our energy production. Then that's something we want to encourage candidates to reconsider. And I think that, none of the work that we try to do is adversarial with candidates. We are actually trying to create relationships with our representatives and legislators, as well as among our faith communities. I think that that goes hand in hand with our idea of what it means to be beloved community, that we're working together to create a future for everyone, where everyone wins. And so, trying to work with candidates to find ways that where it's a win-win rather than an adversarial or that we're always coming in, showing up, protesting or with negative responses. So I think when we stay connected, that's also, I think, a very important aspect of this, that we need to stay connected. We can't just vote and run away. We have to stay connected. We have to be participants. We have to stay in communication with our legislators as well as our faith communities.
And can I just underscore, because it brings us back to the theme of this conversation, that everyone needs to vote in every election, because for leaders to be accountable to you, they know who votes. It's public. It's not public how you voted, but it's public that you voted. And so if our elected leaders know that a certain, neighborhood or a certain group of people or a certain age group doesn't vote or doesn't vote in high numbers, they are not accountable to you in their decisions. Even if you vote for the other person and the other person wins, the fact that you vote means that they are accountable to you, and they know it for the rest of their term. So I really want to underscore that this process of asking our leaders to exemplify our values and be champions on climate justice only works if they know that we always vote.
And we vote in Virginia every year for something or someone. Thank you, Joelle, Novi, and Meg Mall, for this very rich conversation today. I really appreciate working with both of you to put together, as we kind of dreamed and encouraged and pushed each other on this this theme, as well as how we were going to roll out Climate in Pulpits this year. I'm so delighted to work with you, and I'm so excited about what the potential for this year's Climate in the Pulpits will mean for Virginians and for faith communities all across Virginia. So thank you so much for today. And if you want more information about voting deadlines, where to find your polling place, whether you're registered, we have all of that information for you. You can find all of that on Virginia Interfaith Center's website, virginiainterfaithcenter.org. And as well as Virginia IPL, we have it as well. But I hope that you will take Climate in the Pulpits to heart, and that we can get many, many of you to sign up today, because you've watched this show, and tell your clergy friends, your neighbors, your pastor or your rabbi or your imam to sign up for Climate in the Pulpits this year. Thank you so much again, and goodbye.
Bye.